going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Happy hump day, everybody. The final day of April, and we are happy to be with you here on Sports Daily. It should be a lot of fun today on the program. We've got Shreyas Lada, our KU insider, joining us a little later in the program. The Royals win despite the offense again. We'll get into that. We'll get into some portal news for Wichita State, K-State, all kinds of good stuff here. Jacob Albrock alongside Tommy Caster, Max Power producing. We've got you fired up and ready to go on the hotline, 869-1240. You can leave us your comments on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app, where you can also leave us voice messages by clicking the little microphone. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Wednesday. If you're watching our video stream, you probably have noticed that Jacob and I are matching today, rocking the Odyssey quarter zip. So, we coordinated that today.
Yeah, if you were wondering, yes, it was planned. woke up and felt cute, you know.
You know, yesterday was picture day though for the show. So you and I got together, took some photos for the show. All of our great shows here on the Odyssey family of radio stations took photos, and I've seen a sneak peek of some of them. I can tell you that ours are relatively boring compared to
how good do we look.
Some of our counterparts. I think we look solid. We look professional. Yeah. Like we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, we do. All right. Let's jump in. The Royals win, Tommy. The Royals win, and they don't score any runs, but they win. I mean, maybe we just get used to this. Maybe the pitching will bail them out until they can get help in there. Salvi's hitting the ball hard again, which is good. That will help, I think, maybe with some consistency. But I mean, how much longer can they lean into this pitching this way? Like, it's good to get these wins, but it makes you feel a little nervous. Like, we're a month into the season now here.
Well, you know, thank goodness that the pitching was solid. Michael Lorenzen had another really good game, only gave up one earned run in six innings. It was great to see Zerpa come in and pitch a clean seventh. He did give up a hit, but he struck out two in that inning. I think really out of the relievers, you know, Lucas Ercig, I don't want to say he struggled, but there was some traffic in his inning.
By his own standards.
By his own. Yeah. It wasn't a clean inning for Ercig. He got out of a jam. You know, he kept the Rays from scoring in that eighth. So it was a little bit stressful, you know, there for Lucas Ercig. And then, you know, credit to the Royals for, you know, being able to get an additional insurance run in the top of the ninth and give Estevez a little bit of breathing room to close out that game. So, I mean, yeah, like it's become the trend for the Royals. They're not going to put a bunch of runs up on the board, but with really solid starting pitching, getting through six innings with Lorenzen and then turning things over to Zerpa and then Ercig and then Estevez, they kind of followed that blueprint, and it worked for them last night.
Yeah, and we'll dig in further to all of it. And man, it's just it's wild. And it's got to be frustrating for the other teams too, to think, man, we're holding them down and we still can't get anything going. So that, you know, there's a positive side to it. We mentioned the portal news for Wichita State and K-State, each adding a player, a pretty needed player in both cases. In one of the cases, it's a pretty high profile player for K-State. So we have that to dig into. KU remains quiet in the portal. Nothing big happening. I saw, and I have no idea if this is relevance to KU, one of the top 25 players pulled his commitment from Washington. He's a big, so maybe something to keep an eye on. I don't know. But KU's still quiet, and KU, you know, is sitting on a little bit of cash. So I'm curious to hear from Shreyas Lott on what exactly he thinks it is that they're doing with the rest of their roster. We'll have him later in the show. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs are, you know, happening now. I by all accounts, Tommy, it's been a really good NBA playoffs, compelling NBA playoffs. I'm still not there yet. Have you dabbled?
Briefly, a little bit. I mean, I haven't really locked in yet. I usually, in this opening round, I usually don't really get super locked into it. But to your point, I mean, there have been some really big storylines, and there have been some games that have been tight, that have been gritty. You've seen, you know, a little bit of fireworks on the court with some pushing and shoving and fights and that sort of thing. But no, I mean, like I haven't gotten to the point yet. I'm kind of like you. It'll be probably the next round when I actually really get locked in.
Yeah, and there needs to be pushing and shoving. I think that's the talking to Brandon Zinner was lecturing me on how good the NBA playoffs are. And he's like, well, I know why you're not watching the NBA playoffs, because you're watching the Royals. And I'm like, I know, it's hard. Like, it's hard for me to make the switch. I spend so much time and energy now in college basketball. I can't quite put my finger on what has drawn me away from the NBA probably the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. I think one of the biggest reasons is college basketball takes so much energy, and I'm just ready to switch to baseball. But I've always been a baseball fan, and I used to never miss a second of the NBA playoffs. So I don't know. Maybe it's that maybe it's the load management thing. I have no idea, but there are great storylines. Jalen Brunson is stud. I watch him and know that the Mavericks basically just let him walk in the Luka trade, and it's just like, idiots. But we've got, you know, we've got good series. The Pacers lock it up. The Celtics lock it up. But then you've got Pistons and Knicks in a pretty good series. You've got Nuggets and Clippers, people have been telling me about, has been a really good series. The Warriors are probably going to win as a 7 seed. The Timberwolves have a chance to lock it up. The Thunder have already advanced. I think this next round is going to be pretty good. You know, I think between the Cavs and the Thunder, the two top teams of the regular season, people are, you know, questioning both of them. So it should be really good in the next round. And I will try to jump in, lock in, and watch some NBA playoffs. I guess there was double overtime Stanley Cup playoff hockey last night, Tommy. Like, there's not enough time. You gotta yeah. pick. You gotta choose.
Going back to the NBA briefly, though, you mentioned the Pacers and the Pacers and Bucks series had a bunch of drama with Giannis and I think it was Tyrese Halliburton's dad. Like, they were getting into it. What? on the sideline. Like, it's just like there's all this drama with the NBA playoffs. And you've got the Knicks that, you know, they're up 3-2 and they've got an opportunity to move on against the Pistons. It's been a minute since we've had any kind of relevant talk about the New York Knicks. So, yeah, I mean, there are compelling storylines all over the place with the NBA playoffs.
And we'll be here. You know, we'll get into it. If you're an NBA fan and you ever want to talk about it, feel free. I mean, you can. We can give you like bird's eye stuff, but we'll try to lock in. But it's hard when there's baseball. And it like for me, it's just that there's relevant baseball, which we have been starved for, and it's the Royals. And they are there. Look, they're doing what we asked them to do.
They're right? All the way back to 500. I mean, yeah, like they end that bad road trip. And they end up back, you know, up to 500, which is huge.
And you know, however it is that they get it done, they're doing it. And maybe it has looked a little bit different than we thought, but it's not all that different than what we thought. So, you know, as they sit here today, 30 games in at 500, but with a negative run differential, what does that mean long term? That's what we'll get into when we come back. We'll talk some Royals. Winners last night. You heard it here, right here on KFH, in that Tampa Minor League Baseball Stadium, which was kind of interesting. They had some issues on the TV broadcast. I don't know if it had anything to do with the stadium, but it's an adventure out there. There's a couple of places where that's happening this year. Oakland, or well, I guess it's Sacramento, and now Tampa. But we'll talk about it. Royals winners. That's where we head next. It's Sports Daily. It's all Brockton Caster. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day here at KFH and all across the Odyssey family and networks. Just watching the Tyrese Halliburton's dad and Giannis thing. I guess that's the NBA. You get that drama anywhere you can find it. It's certainly something.
Well, yeah. When the Pacers are going to win the series 4-1, you got to try to find some kind of compelling storyline. And I guess Tyrese Halliburton's dad getting involved on the court with Giannis, that's the compelling storyline.
There you go. It's prime time, pun intended, to be a sports athlete dad right now. Never been more relevant, maybe. Anywho, let's talk baseball. So the Royals get the win last night in Tampa. They get a lead early. It was in the first inning, wasn't it, that they scored? Yeah. They get an early lead, and they just hold it the whole time. It's okay. Like, it's fine. We're going to take wins in this season when Detroit and Cleveland are almost certainly going to be good. I don't know about the Twins. I'm not convinced they're as bad as they opened the season. They're heating up a little bit now, just 4 games under .500, by the way. I'm not convinced they're bad either. I think they're probably going to be middle of the road. So you've got a division here where, yeah, the White Sox suck, but you've got 4 competitive teams. If not 4, then 3 for sure. We're going to take wins any way we can get wins for the Royals. So first and foremost, there's that. Then there's this separate conversation we're trying to have of, like, in that competitive division, do they have enough right now? Cole Reagans is going to miss his start today. And they're going to call up one of their prospects to make the start. It's Noah Cameron, I think.
Yeah.
They're going to call him up to make the start, which is fine, but he doesn't have to go on the IL, it sounds like. So that's actually probably pretty good news for the Royals. But as we evaluate this, it's hard to imagine this team, Tommy, reaching its expectation, which I think can be the World Series, you know, getting to the World Series this year. I don't know that this version of the offense is going to be the offense that takes them to that promised land.
Their starting pitching is one of the best in Major League Baseball, just like it was a year ago. I mean, as far as the ERA is concerned, they've got the 4th best starter ERA in Major League Baseball. On the flip side, so that's the positive. On the flip side, they also lead the majors in innings pitched by their starters. Like that, that's something that, I mean, they are leaning heavily on the starting rotation as they need to. And the starting pitching has paid off for that. Like, they've done a really great job. In fact, in the last 9 games, and this is courtesy of Ann Rogers, one of the beat reporters for the Royals, the Royals starters, like, they've had 6 quality starts in their last 9 games. And that's, you know, a direct comparison, a direct line to why they've won 7 of their last 8, because the starting pitching has been so dang good. That's awesome. That's great. And even though the Royals are not averaging a lot of runs per game, slightly over 3 per game, the starting pitching has really been, I mean, they've been the workhorse. They've been the reason why they've won these games. The question becomes, how sustainable is that? How can you, like, can we look ahead 2, 3, even 5 months down the line when we get into late summer, early fall baseball, and you've put this workload on your starters? Is that going to be sustainable? Will they still have the 4th best ERA in Major League Baseball? Will they be able to lead the league in innings pitched? Or are you going to start to see things like what we have seen happen now with Cole Reagans, where he has to miss a start because he's got a little bit of an injury? Like, I want to make sure that, like, yeah, it's great that the starting pitching is doing what they need to do, but they've also leaned on them very heavily. And I'm just a little bit concerned about how sustainable that actually is.
Yeah, like, I'm concerned. I don't know that if they were scoring, though, if we'd see any less reliance. Part of that reliance is the effectiveness of the starters. I think the good thing I think for them in that regard is last year, all these dudes, like, they raised their innings limit bars. They all reached this new frontier. It's part of the reason I was concerned about Brady Singer. It's like, how do they respond to the workload of last year? Well, right now they're responding fine. And so that's good, right? You've replaced Singer with Chris Bubich and you're just rocking and you're rolling your way right through with another great rotation. They're all replicating essentially what they did a year ago. You know, Lugo has not been quite as good, but he's very good in his last start. In totality, he's not like leading the world in all the Cy Young categories like he was this time a year ago. So I think their starting pitching is at least, we'll call it as good. We'll call it as good because I think Bubich Lorenzen is an upgrade over Singer Marsh at this point. And that's no knock on those other two guys. It's more of a tip of the cap to how effective Lorenzen and Bubich have been, honestly. And so I'm good with it. The other thing that's different than last year, their bullpen. I mean, do you remember their April bullpen last year?
It was awful. It was so bad.
So that's another big difference between this year's team and last year's team, and why they can sustain this longer stretch of bad offense is because, yes, their starting pitching is essentially replicating what they did a year ago. That was always going to be pretty critical to what they did. Now their bullpen, like, honestly, for me, it is like we're not even in the same stratosphere with the bullpen from where it was a year ago at this time. I mean, they have two back there that are for sure better. They're trying to get Harvey back. I hope he can be healthy for some stretch for this team based on what they gave up for him. But now you're going to have three Zerpas getting better. That gives you, but then you have Lynch, you have Schreiber, you have all these guys. Now it all of a sudden, they not only do they have a really rock solid back end, they've got a deep bullpen that can help them, you know, alleviate some of the need on these starters once they can get there. But man, when you're 2-1, you're 2-0, you're 3-1, every single night, one way or the other, it is. They're all high-intensity kinds of games that this team is playing. And last year's offense was streaky. We've talked about it. Man, we're at April 30th. Like, I don't think this is just streaky. I don't. I don't think all of a sudden if Vinny Pasquantino gets it together, it's going to mean this team goes and starts scoring 5 runs a game. They are the worst team in baseball offensively right now. When you collect all of them, you know, they're at or near the bottom of the league in runs, home runs, slugging percentage, OPS, whatever you want to look at as far as run generating stuff, they're the worst in the league right now.
And how remarkable is it though that they're back at 500 with one of the worst, if not the worst, offenses in Major League Baseball? I mean, again, it's a testament to their entire pitching staff, to their rotation, to the fact that the bullpen, especially the back end, has been able to hold games. I think that one thing to keep in mind, and we saw it in full force yesterday in last night's game in Tampa, they got out to a lead early in the first inning. They started off that game the way that they needed to start off that game. And I know it was only one run, but still, like, Jonathan India gets on base. He gets a hit. Bobby Witt moves him over. And then Salvi hits a double and is able to drive him in. Like, that's the recipe for success for the Royals. That's why they brought Jonathan India in.
Recipe for one run.
But that's all they needed. I mean, that's all. And because,
well, I know.
And we've had the discussion before, and I know we've talked to Jalen Thompson about this, about the inability for the Royals when they are down to come from behind. That, like, that's not in their DNA. That's not their offensive makeup. Like, they can have their pitching staff hold an opponent to where they give them an opportunity to come back. But we've seen so many times this season, especially on that last road trip when things were so bad for them, that they were getting down early and then they couldn't come back. They were leaving runners stranded in scoring position. They weren't able to drive guys in. And, you know, even a one-run deficit, especially if it was more than a one-run deficit, I'm not sure there's been a whole lot of confidence when you look at this team like, oh yeah, like they've got the opportunity to come back. Like they can get themselves back in the game. They did it last week against Colorado, but the Rockies are god-awful terrible. They were able to win in extras in that opening game when Estevez gave up the lead in the ninth. But that's not something that we count on. So it becomes that much more critical for them to get early leads, because then their pitching can hang on. And, you know, last night was the perfect blueprint for that. They got out to a lead early, and then Lorenzen was able to just kind of roll and make sure that, you know, he turned it over to the bullpen with the lead. So, I mean, that's how the Royals have had success. That's really the way that it's going to have to continue.
Yeah, I think at minimum, like for me, if we're looking for short-term solutions to a long-term problem, because I do think this probably is a long-term problem that they're going to have to address outside of what's currently on the roster, I think in the short term, there are things that can be done. And right away, immediately, Michael Massey needs to not be in the six hole. Like, that needs to stop right away. Either get him out of the lineup or put him...
He bat fifth yesterday.
Five hole. Yeah. That needs to be done. That experiment should be over. He's not productive right now. He has to be removed from that spot. And honestly, I'd take Vinny out of the three spot too. Like, work it out somewhere else in the lineup. Because right now, what you have are a couple of guys who are, you know, their power numbers aren't there, but they're at least productive offensively. It's time to slide up Garcia, and it's time to slide up Drew Waters. Let one of those guys hit third, let one of those guys hit fifth, and at least try to bunch it all together so that when you are threatening in an inning, it's not Michael Massey at the moment coming up with a couple of runners on. Like, he's not doing anything. And I'm not saying give up on Michael Massey at all. I'm saying let some of these other guys who are at least being productive now have more chances at those spots.
Your boy Freddie Fermin was 3-for-4 last night in the eight hole, you know? And so
he's always productive, right? Like, Freddie Fermin, that's why I thought that it would be an interesting experiment to lead him off last year, because he's just always productive. He's not going to blow us away with his offensive numbers, but he doesn't have a lot of bad at bats either. And right now you're getting nothing but bad at bats out of Massey. Vinny, I do think, is hitting it hard and maybe there's a little bad luck involved, but not Massey's got to get out of that spot. Like, you've got Waters and Garcia right now. They may be just on a heater. So take advantage of the heater while they're on it. Now, I think there's a chance both of those guys are sustainable. I'm optimistic for both of those guys. But at this point, if it's going to be India and Bobby Witt Jr. on base and Salvi's, like, you got to move some other guys up there. And it's not going to be like, why are we so beholden to Michael Massey as your five hole hitter? Michael Massey.
Yeah, right? He was productive a year ago. He was one of the more, you know, dynamic offensive threats for Kansas City. There were several times where, you know, last season he was the guy that led them offensively. But I get it. Like, what have you done for me lately? He's in the five hole. Like, it's not working right now. His average is below 200. And the Royals have shown at least a willingness to an extent to try to tinker with the lineup some, to try to tinker with, you know, who's, you know, batting in what order and trying to find ways to get guys more productive. I don't disagree with you. I don't think that Massey right now should be batting fifth. You know, I'm trying to think about, like, what would my ideal lineup be right now? You know, like, I understand the argument of moving Vinny out of the three hole, but who, I mean, do you put Garcia in the three hole? Like, does it go?
I would put Waters in the three hole and Garcia in the five hole. That's what I would do.
I think the only concern I've got about that is that then you end up having basically automatic outs in the lower half of your lineup. And I know, I know trying to stack them all up together, you know, is, I get it, to try to get it out of the way. But at the same time, you're with every at bat, because we just talked about this, with all these games being so close, every at bat is a high leverage at bat. Every at bat, it doesn't matter if you stack up your lower half of the lineup with automatic outs or not, you're going to get into clutch situations late in the game where those guys are going to come up to bat one way or the other. And everything is just made that much bigger because we're talking about close games all the time.
I think Michael Massey has been a really good player for this team and will be, but like, if we even go back over his career, like, last year, it was his best year by far, right? Kind of league average as far as like the like slugging percentage, OPS, those kinds of things. So you've got him hitting in the middle of your lineup like he's a power hitter. He's not. He was in his absolute best, which was last year. If he could replicate it, it would be great. He was league average in both of those categories. So And now, obviously, this year he's well below the average. So, all I'm saying with Massey, and I like Michael Massey a lot, is don't be so beholden to him as being your five-hole hitter, for goodness sake. Like, why would you be so locked into that particular thing? You've got Waters and Garcia hitting. Who knows how long Waters can keep this up, but he's been productive in all of his at-bats. That's like, put him in the three hole. That's exactly what you want out of your three hole, especially if the two guys ahead of him are so good at getting on base. Then you've got Salvi locked in. You don't mess with Salvi. And then, yeah, Michael Garcia's got a little pop. Throw him in there and see how he responds to being a five hole hitter. And then, yeah, you're going to have 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe a little bit down. But I mean, Tommy, I'd rather be down every other inning right now than not be able to drive in runs when you have the opportunities. You know what I mean? Like they've got.
So then, advocating then for Pasquantino to bat like seventh?
I would then slide him to six.
Okay.
In that scenario, I would put him back down at six because then you're still. I'm not quite as concerned about him as I am some of the others. I just think while they're really struggling, it'd be different if they had production elsewhere in the lineup. You could let him sort of work it out there. But right now, I think it's not desperation, but it's offensive desperation where you're starved for it and you have to just scratch and claw your way to a run. Like, no, okay, let's see if we can get some easy ones here and let those guys work it out a little lower in the lineup. Again, I think it was yesterday. I would love for Cotrero to be able to just have the same lineup, the same bullpen every day. Like I am a fan of that. I'm a proponent of that. If it works right now, offensively, that's not working for the Royals. It's not. And so do something else until you can get some reinforcements there to help, whether it's Cags, which I think will happen sooner than we thought, or whether it's, and I also think this will happen. I think both of these things will happen. They go find somebody closer to the trade deadline. Nobody's ready to trade any usable assets at this point, unless you can go to the Rockies. I mean, maybe you can go to the White Sox and see if Luis Robert is available. But I doubt it. And if he is, he's going to be probably more than what the Royals want to pay. So, you know, do something different just now, just for now. It doesn't have to be permanent, but until you can start scoring some runs, they're the worst in baseball right now. Essentially, it's them and the Rangers. Like, they just can't score any runs.
Yeah,
Do something else.
I think the only concern, and this is something that, you know, I don't know what's in Matt Quatrero's head. I don't know what he's thinking right now. But there's part of me that I wonder if he's kind of like, hey, it's working. Like, we're back to 500. We might not be scoring a bunch of runs, but it's working. We're winning games. We've won 7 of our last 8. You know, we've been able to crawl, you know, grind our way back to 500, scratch and claw and get back to where we need to be at an even 500 through 30 games. Let's leave well enough alone. The starting pitching is working. They're shutting people down. We've got the back end of the bullpen we feel confident in. Once we get Hunter Harvey back, we'll feel even more confident. Zerpa's kind of turning things around where they can lean on him a little bit more. They've got other guys that are, you know, effective in Daniel Lynch and others, John Schreiber, in the bullpen. So, hey, maybe we don't mess with it a whole lot right now. Like, maybe we'll just continue to let these guys try to work it out on their own without, you know, shaking the tree too much. And so, again, I don't know if that's his mindset going into it, but it wouldn't be overly shocking for me right now. I mean, it'd be different if they went, you know, that 2-8 on that road trip that was awful for them. And if it just followed them back home and they weren't able to take care of business against the Rockies. They weren't able to take 2 of 3 from the Astros. They weren't able to get this opening game against the Rays. Then at that point, I think that, yeah, there's probably some panic going on.
Let's talk a little college basketball. Let's start with K-State's addition to the roster because I think it's a little more high profile and perhaps more impactful. But they add a Serbian guard. Okay, you've probably never heard of this guy. In fact, if you say that you have before yesterday, I might say you're full of beans here. But Andre Kostic, so this has been updated now. The story when I read it yesterday, and this is according to Adam Zagoria, who follows this stuff, and I think he's been following like a Serbian equivalent page to what he has or something. It's a little hard to follow. But anyway, so the addition is coming from several places. The NIL deal, yesterday it was being reported around $1 million. Today it's being reported around $2.5 million.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so I don't know. which one of those, like the same story has been updated. So that part of it is not, I mean, it's only important to the sense of like K-State is going and finding somebody big, right? Like they're throwing a big bag around. The amount in Serbian media was a million yesterday, but then there is some reporting again. Zagoria, who had this first, I think, is now saying he's been told it's more than double that. So there's that part of it. That's a big deal just to know that K-State still has that, right? Because we've liked some of their additions. Then you get into the part of this that's really intriguing. That's how productive this kid was for his national team, coming from a country and a region of the world where there's been a lot of great players lately. And he averaged almost 16 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, and a steal and a half in his under 18 league last year. So that's what's out there with him. Look, we're not going to sit here. We never have. We never will. We're not going to sit here and try and analyze the game of a kid who's, you know, 18 years old playing in Serbia that we've never heard of before. But the production is there at a level that you like from a part of the world where they're kind of churning him out here lately. And you can just search his name on Twitter, whatever, and you'll start to see some of the highlight videos coming out. This feels like a really, really significant move for the Cats.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about this kid at all. I mean, considering the fact that he's from overseas, he's 18. Like, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time like being able to like assess what kind of landing this is, you know, for Jerome Tang. But what I will say is that it's interesting that, you know, yeah, Tang has worked the transfer portal for sure this cycle, but it does look like the most expensive player, at least right now, that they went out and got is somebody that's not even from the transfer portal. They go overseas, you know, to go and get him. And so I do find that interesting, you know, like I guarantee like there was competition for this guy's services. Like I've got no doubt about that. But it's not like, you know, Tang had to go through the transfer portal and jump through all the hoops and all of that, you know, to be able to make this happen. And I don't know if it's easier to go overseas to get an 18-year-old Serbian kid. I have no idea what the process looks like on that.
Those guys come to the NBA so often.
Yeah.
That's the part for me. Like,
well, and the fact that, dude. I mean, remember, it wasn't that long ago that overseas players, it wasn't like they were able to make money through NIL. You know, that was the big issue. Remember with Johnny Furphy at KU was that he didn't stick around because he couldn't make the money. And so knowing that, you know, the price tag is floating out there, regardless if it's a million or two and a half or whatever it is, it's a pretty significant investment one way or the other for Jerome Tang. And the fact that he bypassed the transfer portal to go and make it happen and go overseas, I do find that really interesting.
So it was 24 points a game for his Serbian team, and then about 16 when they got on some kind of European circuit. If you watch his game, he is – I don't want to say it looks like Luka necessarily, but there are – that to me, when I watch it, that style at least, like just with the ball in your hand, you can kind of score from anywhere and be athletic and do all those things. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think those are fair comparisons. Jokic, Luka, guys that are playing and coming from those backgrounds and their ability with the ball in their hand to score in a variety of ways. That's what you can see that in some of his highlight tapes. And the reason I bring that up is I think it's such a perfect fit for what Jerome Tang has wanted to do at K-State. You know, his first year there, he let a couple of guards do that and it took him to the Elite Eight. At the times they've been good, they've been able to do that. So what I see when I see it is a perfect fit, right? I think Jerome Tang will be perfectly comfortable letting a player of high ability just keep the ball in their hand a lot. And it's not just Tang. Houston just went to and should have won a national championship game. We've talked about it. Playing that kind of offense, right? Letting a couple of guys dominate the ball and just being good at everything else with your other guys. And so we'll see. It does seem like, Tommy, a really good fit. And it's so hard to get excited about these kinds of players that you just don't know, you know, that played nowhere near what we're familiar with, comfortable with. I think it's a big deal, and I think it's a good fit for Tang.
Yeah, I think that time will tell on how that investment will end up paying off, you know, for Jerome Tang, because it's a complete unknown. I mean, we know what he did overseas. We know how, you know, he played with his national team, all of that. And the skill set is absolutely there. We saw what Coleman Hawkins made last year for K-State. This is a completely different situation and a different way that Jerome Tang is utilizing the dollars from NIL. And so it's interesting. I think it's an intriguing direction to go. Like, we saw the high profile transfer make a bunch of money a season ago for K-State, and that didn't pan out as far as the expectations for the team overall last season. So now he's going a different direction, investing money in, you know, somebody that hasn't been high profile in the portal, and going and getting somebody from overseas and bringing them in and seeing how his game will acclimate. Remember, he's still only 18. And so regardless, again, about the amount of money that he's making, he's only 18 and he's got a great skill set. He's got highlights. He's got all of that stuff, you know, the stats to back it all up. He hasn't played, you know, in this country yet. He hasn't played in college athletics. What will that transition time be like? How long will that take? Will he be able to jump in automatically and contribute right away? Is it going to take him some time? Will there be growing pains? Will he take his lumps? All of that stuff, yeah, I think, remains to be seen. I'm not knocking the move at all, because I do think it's an intriguing direction for Kansas State to go with some of their NIL budget. But I think it's, while it might be a perfect fit, I think ultimately the jury's going to be out for a while on whether or not this ends up being a good move for Kansas State or not.
Yeah, I think it's risky in some ways, but I appreciate the, you know, I appreciate the idea of it, right? I appreciate them thinking outside the box to try and, because what we're seeing otherwise, and even more than last year with Coleman Hawkins, to me, it's not even so much that, because Coleman Hawkins was a highly productive player making the kind of money he was reported to have made. We're seeing dudes that aren't that productive make a ton of money. And so, like, if you're sitting there as K-State and you're like, man, if we're going to throw that kind of money at somebody, maybe it should be for somebody who can do what we need, like who can at least like profiles to be the kind of player we need. So I applaud the effort and the energy. Maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. But the tape looks like it's a fit for what Jerome Tang likes to do offensively. Shockers also add a player, Tommy, and not nearly as high profile or productive, but certainly fills a need for them. Emmanuel Okorafor from Seton Hall. You might recognize the name a little bit more. He played at Louisville. I did recognize the name on him. He's big. I think it was Monday. We talked about this, Brandon, because of the Colombian that they brought in. Paul Mills is clearly, and I love this, Tommy, by the way, clearly has a type this offseason. And it's a big dude that can play defense. Like, I don't know, like, Okorafor is not, he has not lit it up. I mean, he's like 2 points, 2 rebounds a game, but he's a big body. And I think it's pretty clear that they want to build around defense this year.
They want to build around defense, but they also want to make sure that they can match up size-wise, you know, against their opponents. And, you know, you bring in Okorafor, you bring in Will Berg. I know they've just got Jarrett Valencia, who's not huge, but I mean, he's,
He's
a defensive guy, and he can play the front court too, for Monmouth. And that was a big get, you know, for Paul Mills. They are going to have size. That's going to be a trademark for this team. They're going to have length. They're going to have size. You would think that defensively they'll be strong. You would think rebounding wise, they will be effective. It's nearly impossible to replace a guy like Quincy Ballard and a guy like Corey Washington, but they had clear deficiencies in that front court going in to this transfer portal cycle. And I think they've addressed that. Whether or not these guys will be more productive at Wichita State than they were at their previous stops, in the case of Okorafor and Berg, we don't know that. But that clearly is a type. It's like, go and find the guys in bigger programs that are not getting the playing time and they're not being overly productive, and bring them to Wichita State to see if they can take the next step in their career. That's been the priority, at least in this cycle, for Wichita State. And from a front court perspective, like, I was pretty concerned sure. with the departure of Ballard and Washington that they weren't going to even have the size to match up. Whether or not they can execute, I don't know yet. Nobody knows that yet if they take that next step forward. But at least from a size perspective, they had checked that box.
It's just remember back to last year, right? Like they started the year as kind of an offense first team. They could score. We liked that. And then they got in a conference play and that hurt them. Well, what turned their season around? They started to lock it down defensively. I mean, that's what they built the late season success on. Jordan asks about, you know, five guys now between 6'8 and 7'2. What do we think about the size? I love it. I love the idea of it. It feels like Shocker basketball to me, right? The offense has never been some of the great Shocker teams. Like offense has never been easy. And that's okay because defense has always looked easy in the great years. And if they can get back to that, I think it raises the baseline. Maybe it doesn't raise the ceiling, but it raises the baseline. And right now they need to raise the baseline. And then Jordan asked, with two of those last three spots, do they go after shooters? We'll answer that question after the break, Jordan. So that you set that up on a course. You know, what happens next now after this? Because there's a couple of roster spots left. We'll hit that when we start our next hour of Sports Daily. Don't go away. It's all Brockton Castor on a Wednesday.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on this Wednesday. We begin our next hour, and we continue the conversation we ended the last hour with, and that's on the Shockers. We talked about K-State's new addition. If you got thoughts on K-State, you can do that. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us video comments on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Or you can leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app. Any way you want to chat about it, we're happy to do it. So the Shockers add Emmanuel Okorafor yesterday. I believe that's how you say it. A big bodied, you know, kind of fits a, you'd think with that size and everything that he will profile nicely as a defender. You know, I think, Tommy, it doesn't mean they're done, though. And that's to the question we got right before the break from Jordan. What do they do with those two spots left, maybe three spots left? Do they need shooters? I think they have some guys that can shoot in small doses. I think the better question is, do they need scorers? Because I think the answer to that is probably yes right now. They have some guys that you feel pretty good about offensively, but I don't think they have anybody yet that we know will be able to provide some offense. I think two things can be true. Like Kendall played junior college. He was able to score there. So maybe he can. Giles is probably your best bet. Boyd is your junkyard dog, I think, right? He's a defensive guy. He was the one that was the SoCon Defensive Player of the Year, but he did average 9 points a year last year. So that's decent offense. Valencia, you know, is probably a better option. We'll see who the starting center would be, Berg or Okorafor, but at least you have the size down there. You got all these young players, Tommy. I think they're the biggest wild cards right now. Like, are any of these young guys capable of stepping up in that way?
I wonder who's going to be the ball handler, like who's prime. And I'm sure it's probably Giles. I'm sure that's probably going to be your starting point guard, I would think. But there's
Kendall,
not.
Kendall, I believe, ran the point a little bit for Barton.
But I'm not knocking Kendall. I mean, I'm sure that he, you know, has a great skill set, but you know, we don't really know much about him coming from JUCO. Like what kind of production can he give you right away? There's not a lot of depth at the primary point guard position right now, I don't think. And so that would be my biggest question is who's going to be your general? Like who's going to be handling the ball? Because we know that, you know, I mean, the Shockers basically lost everybody and they've done a really good job at fortifying the front court. But what does the back court look like and who's going to be the guy to direct everything and run the point? That would be my big question mark going into it. I get the whole thought about, you know, they need scorers, they need shooters, like all of that. And that's not wrong. I wonder who's going to be the guy that, you know, runs the point night in and night out.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. It's probably like it has been. If Paul Mills' history tells us anything, it's probably several of them, right? He had lots of different guys that would bring the ball up. And I would just guess based on that, that maybe, but then you think back to like Max Asmus. So maybe, you know, I think maybe we don't know yet because the player isn't on the roster yet. I don't know what they're still working with financially. I don't know if there is, you know, you that whatever it is, they're probably going to have to go down to another level to find it. You remember when they brought in, I'm ashamed that I can't remember his name now because he played for West Texas where I went to college, and he was, what is his name? Anyway, he had a real high profile at Division II and helped, you know, go to a national championship game and all of these things. Maybe there's a player like that down there somewhere that you could sort of take a risk with. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like a player that can score, you know, can they come up to Division I basketball? But a player that's filled it up at some level somewhere, maybe that's an option. It's hard to guess at this, to Jordan's question, what should they do? I don't know. We don't know because we don't know what they're working with, right? Do they have a $2.5 million bag to go throw at a Serbian international star like K-State just did? I don't think they do. So I don't know what they should do with those potential spots. I don't know what they have in the tank. What would be the best fit? Yes, it would be a couple of guys who can score. I think that would be the best fit. I think they're going to have enough defense now, and that is the right way for Wichita State to build this thing up. Now it's about, well, it's always going to be about fit. We're all guessing. Every single one of us that guesses at this is going to guess at how a fit is when you have this many new players for every team. It will be the hardest college basketball season to predict preseason than we've ever seen before for all teams. But, you know, you like to have the pieces at least.
Well, and at least with the way the roster has panned out so far with the transfer portal and all of that, I mean, I think that we could all probably infer that this is not going to be a highly explosive offensive team.
I don't think so.
You know, at least with the way the roster is right now, there are pieces for sure. Like, I know Giles averaged like over 15 points a game at his last stop and all of that. I mean, that's great and everything. Like, there's going to be offense for sure, but I don't think we're going to see a team that's going to be putting up, you know, consistently 80 plus points a game. That's probably not in the DNA of this roster as it stands right now. Even though they do have a couple of scholarship spots left, maybe they can go and prioritize offense, and you know that might help them a little bit. But at the same time, I think that, like we talked about, this is going to be probably more of a grinded out, low scoring, muck it up, hold your opponents down type team. And with the additions that they've gotten, and I'm really excited about Jarrett Valencia because I feel like he, you know, fits that profile really well, and I think he can be a difference maker defensively for this team. That's going to probably be their calling card. That's going to be their bread and butter, I would think, as of right now with the way that this team pans out.
And look, Valencia shot 38% from three, not a ton of them. I don't think what you're going to see is a team that all of a sudden leans on three-point shooting. I think that gets this team under Paul Mills, at least in his brief history, into a little bit of trouble. I think effective three-point shooting and bulk three-point shooting are two very different things. Unless they get some guard who is known to take, you know, five or six threes a game, I can't imagine this is going to be a team that's in the top half of the country in three-point shot attempts, right? And I think that that's okay. If they're an elite and premier defensive team that makes you work for it, and I think that's what we're seeing being built. I can't wait till the dust settles on all this and we talk to Paul Mills to see, like, how much of this strategically has been just about getting a bunch of dudes that you think can lock it up defensively for a team. That's always a great place. Like college basketball, if you can make it hard on the other team, like I feel like you raise your floor so much. It's hard to go on the road and win in college basketball. If you've got this team that's not allowing more than, you know, 70 points a game or whatever it is that has to come into Coke Arena, like that's going to work. That's going to work. And they'll beat good teams that way.
I mean, what do they always say? It's cliche, but defense travels, right? Like that's the cliche. So like, yeah, if you can shut opponents down at home, but then you've got a skill set that can translate on the road. Sure. Yeah. Like I totally understand why that's being prioritized.
If it's hard to score on the road anyway, you might as well be good at not letting the other team score. Like, that is as elementary as it gets. I tell my now fourth or fifth grade basketball team the same thing. If they don't score, they can't beat us. So let's get in there and let's make sure they don't score. And they embrace that, and it's fine. But that's the same thing for the Shockers. Like, you're not going to go get PJ Haggerty off the street. So go get some dudes that'll come in, buy in. I mean, Greg Marshall built an empire that way. He really did. I can remember one, Quay Grant. Thank you, Jordan. God, I can't believe I forgot his name. Greg Marshall built an empire that way, right? Like, you just better buy in and be able to play defense. I can think of one team. Was it 21? It was the Connor Frank camp. It was that Austin Reeves was still here. They had a bunch of
it was well before 21.
Whatever year it was. I don't remember. Maybe it was 19. But anyway, the year they went and lost to Marshall, like, that team offensively was Landry Shamet was still on that team. So you had Shamet and Frankamp and Reese. Like, they were great offensively, but they were not the best defensive team. It was very, and I always gave Greg Marshall credit for letting that team play that way because it played to their strengths. But that was like the outlier. Every other year they had great teams. It was because they just locked you up.
I think it's fair, you know, to say that it might be, at least from an offensive point of view, with the way the roster has panned out right now, it might be a frustrating offensive season. Like, there may be games where we're like,
I'm counting on it.
Man, like, God, they cannot get the ball in the bucket. But as long as they're locking down on the other end, like, you'll take that trade off if you're Wichita State, because the years where outside of that one outlier year, to your point, the other years historically, like, I mean, going way back in time all the way up to today, the years where they've really tried to lean on offense, I don't think it's really worked out to their benefit. And so I think being able to have that identity be the lockdown, you know, make things really messy and ugly down low, that's Shocker basketball historically. And that's where they've had a lot of their success.
Yeah, and when was the last time the Shockers didn't have a frustrating offensive season?
You have to go back to that Frankamp and, you know, Shamet and Reeves team.
Every other year, it's like, man, they struggle to score. But so if you're going to do that, you might as well make it hard on the other team to score too. Anyway, I like the makeup of this. I do think they need another player with some firepower. I do, or maybe two. But from a strategy perspective, I like it, to answer the question. We'll come back. We got more Sports Daily. What's KU been up to? Shreya Slaughter will help us answer that question a little later. We have other stuff to talk about in this hour, too. Don't go away. Coming right back.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed, because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you here on a Wednesday. Let's give away some HTO. Let's do that. If you want to win a free iced tea, all you got to do is text keyword T to 20357. Sorry, I was trying to track what time it was. 20357, text keyword T. You'll get a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors to choose from. You can get those in East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. While you're there, check out the new refresher drinks. They're very popular. If you need a little energy boost, these free coupons are not for those drinks, but you can still try one. See what you think. Good luck, everybody. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. We come back here. Tommy, we've been talking a lot of college basketball. Let's look forward for the Royals, because we're going to go back to college basketball in our next segment with Shreya Salata. As we see them now back at 500, and you and I love to do this. I do anyway. Looking ahead, like, okay, so we set 11-5, if you'll remember, on this 16-game stretch that they were on, that they started. So far, what are they? They're 6-1. To start that out, and they finish it up here with a couple games in Tampa, a couple games in Baltimore, and then they go on to Chicago. I think it's attainable, and it would put them at the end of this thing. I mean, now you look at it and you can break it down even further. They've already returned to 500, so now they've got 9 games left. So let's break it down further. 5-4, the benchmark here. I think that's fair. Five of the 9 are going to come on the road. I know 4 of them are against the White Sox, but I think 5-4 is fair. And obviously there's room to be much better than that.
Yeah, I would go higher than that. I mean, I think 6-3, because, you know, keep in mind, I know the Orioles have a ton of great talent, you know, especially young pitching and all of that, but they're probably, through the first month of the season, the most disappointing team in Major League Baseball. They're 7 games under 500. It reminds me a lot of when the Royals caught the Guardians early in last season, and you're like, man, it's kind of good timing that they're getting the Guardians now, because Cleveland will be better the next time that they play and take advantage of it now. I think the Orioles probably will turn things around, I think, because they do have a ton of great talent, but they're in last place in the AL East right now. The expectations are a lot higher for Baltimore, and I think that they'll be able to get it turned around, but it's fortuitous, I think, for Kansas City to get Baltimore both at home earlier this season, and then they go to Baltimore now when clearly the Orioles are reeling. So you've got them right after you've got 2 more games against Tampa. You've already beat them once. And then you play Chicago, who's one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. So I think 5-4 is probably underselling it. Like, I would look at a better record, you know, through this road trip, through the next, you know, few games. I'd probably go 6-3 baseline, if not better than that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they'll finish better than 5-4. But if all we were trying to do in the 16-game stretch was to get them back over 500, that's all it's going to take. And yes, I agree on Baltimore. Here's the interesting thing about Baltimore, though. They don't have Corbin Burns anymore, remember? They've got the worst pitching right now in the American League. Like, they're giving up a ton of runs, which is probably, to the timing thing, great news for the Royals, right? Like, it's kind of like the Rockies thing. Well, if you can't score against decent pitching, maybe you'll just be able to score against bad pitching. And in one of the games where they scored more than 4 runs, and I think they've only done it 4 times all year, was, I believe, against Baltimore early in the year. So, yes, I think that timing is kind of nice, right? I think it's pretty good timing. And so Tampa's good. Tampa, the thing about Tampa is you're always going to face a good pitcher. Like, they're pretty deep in their rotation, and they'll face 2 good ones over the next 2 days. So, you know, with a rookie out there today, we'll see what happens, but it's going to probably be a lot like it was yesterday. And then, yeah, you hope you can pile it up a little bit when you face the White Sox and the Orioles. And I again, that's not the long-term solution, though. Like, it can't just be an offense that only scores a decent amount of runs against bad pitching. That's a good place to start. Like, you should at least be able to do that. But I do think when we're talking, because everything we talk about with the Royals is with the anticipation of them getting back to the postseason and making noise, right? Like, it's not just, this isn't just a cute story like it was a year ago. There are clear expectations this early in the season. And so everything is in the scope of, well, what does it look like to trying to get back to the postseason and winning games in the postseason? And I think when we think about it that way, like, eventually they're going to have to hit against good pitching. Like, they're just going to have to. Maybe they don't. They'll face that in the Rays series. The Rays series of the next, what does that make, eight games that they'll play, nine games that they'll play? It's these games against the Rays that could be the most telling, I think, long term to the kind of pitching they'll consistently see in a postseason series. It's not what they're going to see out of Baltimore or the White Sox. I think Baltimore will pitch better by the end of the year or go down swinging, trying to get it in there. But, you know, like, what's the true indicator of the kind of pitching they'll face? It'll probably be what you see in the next two. And they're going to have to figure out a way. I don't even know. Like, it's so strange that the power numbers are collectively so bad, Tommy. Scratching and clawing runs together against good pitching is good and what you want. But right now it's like, no, we want some juice. We want to know that the juice is at least there, right? Scratching and clawing your way out to the wins that they've had lately are great. But man, we gotta know if that juice is there. We have to start learning that.
Every game that goes by, you know, the sample size gets larger and larger where we know the juice is probably not there. And I know that there are a couple of guys that are needing to kind of flip that switch and turn it around. I'm looking at Vinny Pasquantino. Salvi's done a better job lately. I think he's kind of broken out of his slump, so that's good. But by and large, overall, I think that this offense is what it is for the most part. We could probably see incremental improvement from Pasquantino, probably see incremental improvement from Michael Massey. But I think by and large, this team is who they are through 30 games of the season. And so without other reinforcements coming in, I think we can stop expecting them to just explode offensively, like have this like renaissance where they just are able to come out and just the bats are on fire. We saw it to an extent in the Rockies series, but everybody beats up on the Rockies. Like, everybody does. The Rockies are god-awful. They're 21 games under 500 through the first month of the season. Everybody beats up on Colorado. And you know what? As soon as the Royals were done with the Rockies series, they backed up the onslaught of offense that we saw in the final two games with a 2-0 win and a 2-0 win against the Astros. Like, they started to face a little bit better pitching. They won both of those games, but it wasn't like the big-time offense carried on after the Colorado series. It went right back to what we've seen basically the entire season outside of that 1-3 game stretch. So, I mean, I think that we can, at this point, until there are roster changes in one way or the other, whether it's calling somebody up like Caglione or making an acquisition of some kind, I think we can stop expecting this team to just go out there and put up a bunch of runs.
Well, I mean, it can be better, though, than what it is. Like,
it can be incrementally better, right? Like, they're averaging
your three and your five hole hitter have been as bad as they have to open up the year. I think there's room to be a, you know, like, let's say it's, you know, maybe they are scoring three runs a game and it goes to four. Right. Like, I think
when they put four runs up on the board, you view that as a win, right? Like, that's a great outing for Kansas City's offense. Like, they're averaging slightly over three runs a game. And
it's bad.
Yeah. Like, it's like 3.1 is what they're averaging.
They can get it to four. That's what I mean. Like,
that's the magic number. Like, I'm done being like, man, they need to put up five, six, seven runs. Like, it's going to be four. And at that point, if they can put up four and then turn things over to their bullpen, that's their winning formula. That's kind of the way this team is composed right now. That's about all we can expect.
But you have to remember, like, when we're talking about the Royals and the potential, it should be better than what it's been. Like, take Vinny Pasquantino, and I know and consider that he even started slow a year ago, right? Like, if you go back and look, if he didn't have injuries last year, he would have been among the league leaders in RBI. Like, he was close to that last year. You know what I mean? Like, that. So that's what he does. Like, what he does when he's right is what this team needs so desperately. He just drives and runs. But he's not doing that right now. So his improvement adds a little bit. Putting somebody more productive in your five hole. I'm not saying that responsibility is on Massey because I think that's unfair. I think it's fair to say the responsibility is on Vinny Pasquantino. I think it's unfair to say it's on Massey. Massey's a piece. Massey's not what Vinny Pasquantino needs to be for this team. So just try somebody else out in the five hole. Vinny's production, if it comes as normal, will absolutely add production to this offense. There's no question about it. It's why we love the top four in this lineup. And I've been on the record saying I thought it was as good as anybody's top four with India and Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny and Salvi. Well, when Vinny ain't going, there's not a lot of wiggle room elsewhere. And so if he gets back to what he's always been, which is a great run producer, a great run driver in or whatever, then that's going to help the offense by half a run a game. I really believe that. Like, him alone just getting out of the schneid will help that much. The other part is, do they, you know, I think you take Hot Hand right now, sort of in the middle of the lineup, and then eventually you're going to call somebody up there to help you do that. Like, if they call up Cags, he's not going to go in and just be the five-hole hitter. He's going to start down at the bottom of the lineup. He's going to be protected as he should be because he's never going to get a strike thrown to him until he shows he can be patient at the plate. Like, all of those things have to happen for him. Trade deadline is far more likely, but we're so far away from that, Tom. Like, in a best case scenario, you're a month and a half probably away from making any impact there. So until you get there, back to our conversation in the last hour, you got to mix it up a little bit. You can't, like, if you got hot bats like you do, throw them in there where they can actually be productive. I love seeing Drew Waters single all the time with nobody out there on base. But let's try it when somebody's out there on base.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got guys that can deliver consistently in that role, you know, like whether it's Drew Waters or, you know, even Freddie Fermin last night being able to be 3-for-4, like put them in positions where, you know, their hits when they're getting on base are actually contributing to runs, where they're driving in runs with the production that they're providing at the plate. With Michael Massey, you know, he's had, I guess you can call it a benefit throughout the course of this season to fly under the radar. He's not been good at all this season, but he's flown under the radar because MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe have been worse. And so all of the attention's been on those guys. And so Massey's been able to just be in that five hole or six hole, wherever they put him, you know, night in and night out, and go 0-for-3, 0-for-4, you know, like not produce, barely bat. I mean, not even get to 200 for an average right now. His OPS is way down there. And it's just now kind of garnering the attention with Melendez down to AAA and Renfroe really not playing much. It becomes that much more visible that Massey is struggling in high profile spots in the five hole in the lineup. When you've got the top four that are delivering, even though Pasquantino has struggled, I think it's really that much more glaring because at least last night, and there have been other games where this has been the case, I mean, he's batting directly after Salvador Perez. And Salvi's getting on base at a much higher clip than he was 2 weeks ago. And, you know, Salvi's driving in runs. He drove in Jonathan India last night in the first inning, but he's hitting doubles. He's been a double machine and he's getting on base. And Michael Massey has been an automatic out. He's not been able to drive Salvi in. And so I do think it's become that much more glaring and apparent and obvious now that you've got the other guys that have struggled worse than Massey out of the gate. They're either not on the roster right now or they're not playing a whole lot. And so it does shine that light more on the struggles that Massey has.
Yeah, I think that's like for me when I'm watching and again, I think Massey is useful and good and can be even an everyday player at his ceiling, but he is not being put in a good position right now. Like, he is pressing. To me, it's pretty visible that he's pressing. Just slide him down to where he's always been good and let it be okay, because they're going to need him right now. I think everything's going to be fine. I think everything's going to be fine because they're pitching enough, and I love their bullpen, and they just like they're, you know, 3 runs a game is going to be enough for them to win a lot of games. Is it enough games? I would say no. I would say it's not going to be enough. I think some of that gets better internally, and I think some of it absolutely must get better externally. Noah Cameron comes up to make the start tonight, Tommy. This is interesting. Noah Cameron's been, he's been really good.
He has been really good. Yeah, he was good in the spring. He's been good in the minors. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I haven't taken a look at him, but I can just tell you right now, his ERA is low. He started in AAA, by the way. He's got 2.58 ERA, but he's striking out a lot of batters. Like, he's striking out a little more than a batter an inning. It's over the last two seasons where these numbers are coming from in AAA, all of them, like, he's been effective. So we wondered, like, what is the backup plan for that fifth starter? Well, then Marsh gets hurt, and what is the depth piece? Boy, that would be a big development. If Noah Cameron could come up today and have a nice day on the mound, and just to know he's there, because I don't think, like, has he ever been called up? This is a debut today.
No, this is his debut. Yeah, his major league debut.
He has all kinds of options for this team just to sort of sit in AAA and come up and be the reinforcements, because they're going to get the same thing out of Alec Marsh. To your point in something you talked about in the last hour with how many innings the starters are pitching, these are potentially big developments for Kansas City, I think, in the long term of what could happen if they have any injuries in the rotation.
Yeah, and it's a best-case scenario, too, with Reagan's not having to go to the IL, you know, just pushing his start back, because you don't have to put Reagan's, your number one guy, on the IL, and you get to see what this young kid has. You know, it could very well be like, hey, this could be a guy that we need to lean on as the season progresses. If you've got an opportunity for a spot starter, or God forbid, one of the main starters goes on the IL for any length of time. And I like the fact that he's going to get some run early in this season to be able to see what he's got. I don't think it'll be the last time we see Noah Cameron this season. And if he has a good outing, it's going to be tough today.
Let's hope it's not.
Yeah, right? It's going to be tough today. I mean, like, he's opposite of Drew Rasmussen, who's a good pitcher. And, your debut is a challenge against the other guy that's going up against you for the Rays. But I like the fact that they're giving him some play early on in the season to see what he's got. And best case scenario, Reagan's doesn't have to go to the IL.
Absolute best case scenario with Reagan's. They got to have Reagan's. And it would have been so easy. That's the thing I think that's the most promising. It would have been so easy to put him on the IL. Right now, at this point, it's going to be that amount of time anyway. But the fact that they didn't and they don't have to, I think, tells us it's not of major significance. He did not look good in his last start. I don't know for how much of that game that groin was bothering him, Tommy, but he didn't look good, right? Like, he was giving up runs early and all these things. So I'm glad he's getting the extra rest. If Cameron pitches well, maybe skip his next start. You know, like, don't rush it back when it's a soft tissue injury like that. But I thought Cameron, I hadn't paid any attention to him until he got called up. And I was like, man, he's been.
And one thing to keep in mind with Reagan's, like, if we're looking at the way the rotation, you know, pans out, Reagan's next start, correct me if I'm wrong, would be in the White Sox series. Like, that might not be a terrible opportunity to give him a little bit more rest and, you know, let Cameron go if Cameron has a good outing today.
Or let him get his work in, right? Let him come in and pitch a couple innings and then just have a pull. Yeah, either way, let's hope Cameron finds some success. Cool story. He's been really, really good in the minor leagues, like, really good. And he's been hanging around in AAA, and he gives the Royals some depth there that they desperately need. Here's the other part of it, Tommy. Keep this in the back of your head today. Remember how they need a high-profile bat? Noah Cameron could be a trade piece.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We are glad to be here with Shreyas Lada, our KU Insider, following along as K-State Shreyas makes a pretty large splash in the portal world with an international player that now today is being corrected to some reporting of $2.5 million on that NIL deal. KU has not made that deal yet, at least for a new player, right? We know Jaron Peterson's that kind of player. We assume probably Flory Badunga got something large, but they haven't gone outside and done something like that yet. And it begs the question, do you think that they will?
I think Darian Williams is the only player right now I have on the radar that could command something like that, where it'd be more than $2-3 million.
Who's the player?
Darian Williams.
Oh, from Texas Tech. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but from what I have gathered, and I talked to his agent like for 20 minutes on Saturday night, they're 100% focused on the NBA draft right now. Okay. So there's – and they told Kansas right now the focus is the NBA draft is what he told me. Obviously, things can change based on feedback and stuff like that. But they're going to go through the process. So that could stretch into like mid to late May, you know, whether he comes or doesn't. I don't know if Kansas is going to sit around waiting for it. But yeah, that was the one player that I was like, I think they could make a big splash on. Obviously, Foray got a nice pay bump with, you know, basically almost like it felt like a holdout, it felt like. But yeah, no, they haven't really significantly spent NIL dollars on somebody in the transfer portal this year compared to like something like last year where they paid AJ Storr and Rylan Griffin big money.
Do you feel like they're holding out for Darian Williams? Like, I'm sure that he's, you know, he's definitely a big time addition if they're able to get him and he doesn't go through the NBA draft process. But is that prohibiting them from going after other people with that NIL money? Or do you think it's mainly Darian Williams or bust?
I think it's mainly Darian Williams or bust, but as we've noticed in Kansas, the way they operated is a lot of times guys kind of just come out of the radar. You know, they haven't been super publicly, you know, talking guys like one of them, like, you know, for example, Ahmad Bynum, I wrote about a couple of days ago. Kansas was very interested in him. That is now not on the table anymore, for example, because they kind of dug deep into some of his suspensions in the past. And they I heard from a source that Kansas just ended up canceling the Zoom calls they were had set up for yesterday because they didn't like what they heard. And it was kind of a messy situation. But this is kind of what I'm saying. Like right now we're at the point where we're in the transfer portal where, you know, guys are there for a reason and either they have a very high price tag or B, there's some sort of war, you know, whether it's like a disciplinary thing or something like that on them. You know, with Darian Williams, like, I feel like, you know, they would prefer to have him like above all else. Like, I don't think there's anyone else that they really have on the radar that is commanding that kind of NIL figure. Obviously, you know, a guy like RJ Lewis would be something that they look at, but I don't think there's been much Kansas interest there. I think the price tag is just too high. And these guys know that the longer they stay in the portal and the longer other guys stay in the NBA draft, they are going to get the biggest share of NIL dollars left among one school. So if they're going to chase the money, like I was talking to an agent recently, like, if there are guys who want to just chase NIL money, there's plenty of schools offering NIL dollars. The issue is, are they offering the other things the guys want? Winning opportunities, chance to play in the NBA eventually, stuff like that. So that's why Kansas is being a little prudent with the guys they bring on because they want to be right culture fits, A, but also B, you know, the biggest thing is, are you okay with the idea of being a second fiddle to Darren Peterson? And some of these guys aren't. Like PJ Haggerty is not. He wants the ball in his hands.
What about this kid from Washington who's a top prospect who has some size, who's pulling? Have you heard? I don't know if you've heard about him. Any interest from KU there? We always pay attention to the blue chip prospects when they're out there, and it looks like another one is out there.
I haven't heard anything yet on KU's side, but obviously things change so rapidly, right? And I'm guessing if the blue bloods are after him, Kansas will be right in that group. I haven't seen who's interested and who's not, but I'm really intrigued to see how they fill out the roster because it's clear they need a wing, they need a backup big, and they need a guy that can shoot the ball. So theoretically, if Zeke Mayo does get granted that fifth year, which he seems open to doing, and I've asked around guys in the NBA who cover the NBA, like draft and stuff like that, Zeke Mayo is not on anyone's boards right now. So obviously things can change, but if he does get that fifth year of eligibility, there's a high level of interest between both sides. He called it a backup plan, but, you know, reading in between the lines of just how much interest there is for him on this thing, I think he'd be a nice guy to fill out the roster. But no, I haven't heard anything on the Washington front, the Washington player.
We know that, you know, there are several guys that entered the portal from Kansas that have already found new homes. Zach Clements is going to A&M, and we know that Diggy Hoyt's going to Maryland, and like all these different, you know, players going elsewhere. There are a couple of players that are still undecided. I'm sure Rylan Griffin is long gone from the Jayhawks, but I know Rakese Passmore is still out there. Have you heard, is there any chance that maybe he ends up returning to Kansas, or will he go elsewhere?
I reported a while ago, like I talked to him, that he didn't completely shut down the door of the idea of coming back to Kansas. This was very early in the process. Like this is maybe a couple days after he declared and stuff like that. So obviously things have changed, but you know, with Passmore, it seems like he's trying to figure out what his market is there. Cause he just wants playing time. That's basically what he said to me. He's like, the only reason I entered the portal was playing time. I love playing under Bill Self. Bill Self basically told the same thing, like go out there, see what your worth is. Yeah. And if there isn't what you want, you know, we would welcome you back if there is a right fit there. The issue is Rakese Passmore is putting in a tough situation where if he does come back, he's not going to play next year. They have too many guards as is. What skill does Rakese Passmore give that the other guards don't already give at a better level, right? That's the issue for him. And I feel for him and I feel for Rylan right now because it feels like, especially for Rylan, I was texting a buddy, he's like, you know, covers Kentucky. It feels like he's a little bit of a backup plan for a lot of schools right now. You know, he's not the number one option. And, you know, Kentucky was very interested until they weren't. You know, I know there's murmurs of LSU and Miami and stuff like that. So even Alabama, I'm intrigued to kind of see what happens because I feel like nobody really anticipated him being the transfer portal market as long as he has been right now.
He's got an opportunity to go somewhere and be a great player again. It's not just like, remember what he was like. It's not even a, just to be a piece. Like he could be elite somewhere else. Let's talk football for a minute. Trey Slotta, KU beat reporter for the KC Star, joining us both men's basketball and football. On the football front, we just completed the draft. We see some KU guys go. That's always good for the program. How have things been now through some practices and some looks at this roster? Are they going to have enough? They've had a nice portal cycle. Like, are they going to have enough to compete in the Big 12, you think?
I think it's too early to say, but I feel confident that they should be in good contention to be a bowl team next year. I think a lot of the whether they compete for the Big 12 or not hinges on Jalen Daniels' ability to play as well as he's played before last year, really. Like, you know, you need him to be back at that level, if not better. But I feel more confident than I did a couple months ago. You know, they've done a good job reloading the transfer portal cycle. The continuity's there. Obviously, we haven't seen their practices in like 2 weeks because I know K-State and Kansas have a different schedule, but they ended spring football for Kansas around like 11th, I think, or so. The last practice was. But, you know, they've done a good job of addressing some needs in the transfer portal in the summer. Obviously, the one guy I was disappointed to see leave was Keon Barnett from Arizona, because I think he would have been a really nice tight end. But I think that speaks to the competition in the room. Deshaun Hanukkah is doing a really good job. I've heard good things about him and the other tight ends, the younger guys they brought in. So that's a positive sign, perhaps. But I feel more confident about KU football than before. And I meant to mention this earlier, but in the comment that was saying Furphy didn't get NIL, Furphy did get NIL. It was just hush-hush. Like, they had to send it to Australia to get the NIL paid off. So the idea that Furphy did not get paid NIL is not
but
true.
But did his inability to get it easily impact, do you think, at all his draft decision?
Not really. I was in contact with his entire, like his camp, the entire process. They were getting told that he could be a lottery pick last year. And he worked out with lottery teams. He met with multiple lottery teams. Like, no one expected the slide to be what it was, you know? And obviously, you know, he ended up in a good team. The Pacers are a good team, you know, but the expectation was Furphy was going to be gone by 20, you know, and I think the way the season played out was tough on him. And I think he really loved his time at Kansas, though. Like, I think there was no issues with that there, but it was a little bit tricky, you're right, to get the NIL money to him because they had to send, like, a guy to Australia. And as soon as he lands on Australian soil, they give the bag, essentially. But yeah,
that's wild. Going back to football real quick, Shreyas, before we let you go, how did you feel about the landing spots for some of the Jayhawks that were drafted?
I really like Devin Neal's landing spot. I really didn't love that he fell because I felt like he should have been a fourth, fifth round guy, you know, at worst. I get the traditional speed sense. Devin is not the speedster per se, but he's much faster with pads. I think he has good acceleration. I am really intrigued to see how they use him because I think he can be the number two back behind Alvin Kamara this year. I think he's better than Keandre Miller. He's, first of all, Keandre Miller's never healthy. That's the issue there. But number two, like, Kansas didn't really use him as a pass catching back as much as he played in high school. Like, I was talking to his dad like ages ago about this, but he was used a lot in high school as a pass catching back. I'd love to see him using that role a little bit with the Saints, obviously, as long as in the sense of he behind Kamara, because I don't think he can take the starting job, but I feel like he can compete for it after Alvin retires or moves on or whatever. I don't presume Alvin Kamara is in the Saints' super long-term plans. He's older. You know, I presume he maybe has a year or two left. I haven't got his contract, but I like the landing spot there. I like Bryce Cable, too. I think that's a decent spot. Seattle, you know, new QB. I'll get a chance to compete maybe for a backup job or at least a spot on the 53-man roster or whatever. I'm really intrigued and surprised a couple of guys were undrafted. Kobe Bryant was one of them. Melo Dotson was another. Logan Brown was another guy I was a little surprised. I thought Logan and Kobe would 100% get drafted. Like, Logan was projected in the fourth round from multiple mocks I saw. I was very surprised by that. Kobe, you can say whatever you want about his size. And I know he said
be a pro.
Yeah, I think he is too. Like, I just don't understand. Like, the idea that 26 corners were selected before him, like, whatever. Like, to me, that's just stupidity. This is a guy who was a three-time first-team All-Big 12 player. He had warts, but so does everybody else. If his biggest issue is, well, he's 175 pounds, he's 183 pounds, well, okay, man, just feed him food. Like, what are we doing here? He can play slot corner. If he's good, he's good. I mean, and I felt bad for him a little bit, you know, because I know he really did work his tail off. And, you know, I think my Atlanta fans have been texting me about him because I'm from Georgia, so everyone's been like, what are we? I was like, well, I think he's a dog. Between him and Nash, the Falcons picked up some undrafted free agents that are pretty intriguing. So I'm happy for him in that sense, but I was surprised he wasn't drafted.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was more surprised by Bryant than I was Devin Neal falling, honestly, just as productive as he was at that position. Shreyas, we appreciate it. Go find all the great stuff. Shreyas has his hand, finger on the pulse all the time. You can follow him on social at SHRE98. You can find all his work at KC Star. We appreciate it because we can't do it. We can't keep up with the portal. So we're glad that you can.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That'll do it for Sports Daily on a Wednesday. We got Royals baseball coming up. Pregame coverage begins at 6 o'clock. We'll see if they can score some runs. It's going to be tough tonight. But more importantly, we'll watch Cameron in that debut.
But then also, I think it could basically show what this guy has long term. I'm excited about it.
Tomorrow, we'll have Tim Fitzgerald in. Excited to get his take on this new Serbian player coming into K-State hoops and maybe a little more time for his Go Powercat crew to get the latest on that. So we're looking forward to that as well. That'll be it for us. Your comments, calls, always welcome. For Max and Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you Thursday.